We is recording.
Oh, it's already started?
We started.
All right. Welcome, friends, to episode 2 of Relic Buds, a Relic Blade podcast. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, a Metal King Studio podcast featuring your host, Sean Sutter, creator of Relic Blade, Sludge, and Cretaceous Commandos.
What?
And your guy, Malevolent MC.
Oh,
introduce
dang.
Yourself, Malev, with your beautiful voice.
Hey, y'all. It is your boy, Malev MC / Malev the Shinobi / just Malev. Guy who paint minis sometimes. Also play lots of games. But I do want to point out, though, that it's actually episode 1. I know.
You're totally right. Because episode 0 was us figuring out what the heck we were going to do.
Yeah, episode 0 was a happy accident. And big shout out and lots of love to everybody who took the time to listen to that. It was really, really inspiring and getting me really motivated to... looking forward to recording this, you know, next session. And if you're watching on YouTube, you can see our cool little layout here, which is, if you're a fan of Relic Blade, which should be pretty obvious, then you will admittedly go, well, that's neat when you see it, because it's neat. Certified neat.
Yeah. I did some of the work for it, but we also got help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Shout out to my man, Darrow. Helped us with that. And it's looking pretty cool. And then, yeah, Sean came up with these sweet character cards that we are framed in. And, yeah, they're pretty accurate Relic Blade descriptions. I think it's interesting that I have 5 AD and Poet Brain, where you have 4 AD and Artist Brain. So it's like your artist brain will just take away half your actions. For me, though, what's funny is that I lose 2 of my actions to Poet Brain, and then I have the other 2 dice to do on Wicked Paintbrush, and then I just have a dice that does nothing, and that is perfect. You know, I can't use it. I can't finish it. I can't do anything with it. You know, it's so accurate.
Around, I guess.
Yeah.
You can climb on stuff. Mm. Yeah, I got my 2 actions sunk this week. I gotta say, this past week, because we like to share what we've been working on. And I was supposed to be like going crazy, going to town on finishing up the latest draft of Relic Blade Solo, Catacombs of Caral.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got to just, harness that like hyper-focus when I have it. And this week, Cretaceous Commandos occupied all of my imagination.
Cretaceous Commandos, you know, and like we were talking about, you know, it's just one of those things, and it happens to me a lot as well, even though, like we were saying last episode, when it comes to music and stuff, that's more like my pure art, you know, and I guess if we're going to use terms, that's the quote-unquote, like, hobby, you know, and so a lot of the times, if I'm spending time doing music stuff, and I know I should be painting or doing whatever, that voice will come on in my head, and I'll be like, oh, you know, this is cool, but you kind of should be, you know, doing the thing that you said you were going to be doing, you know. Mm-hmm. But when it comes down to it, because sometimes I have such a difficulty writing so frequently, like it's always this process that's it's becoming more difficult as time goes on and I become a little bit more separated from the medium on an everyday basis. But when it hits me, I gotta just lean into it because it's rare, you know, it's like catching a pass from the universe. You just have to catch it. You can't.
Yeah, exactly. And like, really the games or the figures or the ideas and drawings that like I'm compelled to make end up, like, I need to take advantage of that when it happens, because I could just as easily spend all my time shipping orders, organizing inventory, running a website, you know, running social media campaigns, ad campaigns, or whatever.
Yeah.
And that would be productive and make me money. But, like, if I'm not, you know, I'm an artist. And so if I'm not making art, then what the heck?
Yeah.
And so when I am overwhelmed with that artist brain stat, then I need to just, like, run with it. And so half of my actions are already spent just on whims. And so this week's whims were Dinosaur Commandos.
Dinosaur Commandos.
Yeah, let me tell you, Malev, let me tell you what I did this week. So, because with Blaster Volume 5, which is the next one, I didn't want to just do, like, another sludge thing right away, because I have plans for that. And then, you know, Relic Blade, well, I've got this big Catacombs of Coral release I'm working on getting ready.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to do something smaller and, like, a standalone arcade game, because I've always really wanted to, well, not always, but lately I've really wanted to take tabletop games and try and make them, you know, very playable, and also capture some of the fun of, like, a really cool specific indie game. Like, I really like games on Steam from indie producers that are, like, you know, cool graphics and really specific scope, and you just, like, get the game, you play the game, you enjoy the game. Like,
makes me think, like, of probably a really digital.
Good example would be, did you ever play FTL?
I didn't play FTL, but we're definitely on the same page for, like, what type of games we're thinking of.
Yeah, like, it's just what it does really well. Mm-hmm. And you can pick it up and play it. And it doesn't have to be, like, your main game that you play, you know?
Yeah, and I think a lot of them are designed kind of with that in mind, which is interesting thing I want to circle back on. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and so with miniature games, it's easy for a miniature game to be, like, the game you play. But I wanted to make a game that's, like, gonna be really fun to just plug in and play and, like, you know, boot up a cool game cartridge. And so I'm going hard into, like, the arcade game aesthetic of, like, a 80s or 90s Streets of Rage, Turtles Out of Time sort of like high adventure, big explosions and lots of lasers gameplay.
I'm with
and,
you.
So I had this idea, kind of a Battle Beasts, Ninja Turtles adventure game. And I also had wanted to make a Commando game. I watched a documentary about
when, like, you say when you say Commandos, what do you mean exactly?
Oh, I'll tell you. I watched a documentary about World War II commandos from, like, the British military.
Mm-hmm.
And Winston Churchill called them, like, it was something crazy. It's like Butcher and Bolt operations.
Butcher
and where they Bolt. Just show up and do as much damage as possible.
And that's a reference
and
to...
And then get out.
Like, knives and bolt-action rifles, essentially? Is that... Butcher, like, and Bolt?
Like, Bolt, like, as in...
Oh, speed?
Like, hit it and quit. Like, yeah, get in there.
I'm out. Yeah, I'm with you.
And just... So, the idea of showing up and just like, mashing. Unloading just Uzis and bazookas and blowing up a starship and then escaping. But...
The first scene of Predator, essentially. Opening scenes of Predator, essentially.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Commando operation. Just quick scout. This guy's there. That guy's there. All right, you shoot the grenade. You take out the tower. I'm running and I'm going to chop this fool. And then bam, bam, bam.
I'm always trying to avoid... Well, not avoid. I'm always mindful of how my art communicates and what I want to say. And so I've been diving into a lot of fun ideas with the Cretaceous Commandos, taking the real-life violence... zooming out into cartoon fantasy violence, but then also reframing the explosions as metaphors for like stuff. Anyways, it's goofy to talk too deep about it. The idea is to make like a really fun cooperative or you know, a competitive cooperation where you are trying to get the high score, but you're also working together against the game.
I was going to say, like, do the most damage.
Yeah. So it'll be really fun. But with this past week, I had, like, a bunch of ideas sort of vaguely, partially formed, and then they suddenly, like, calcified in my brain.
Just clicked.
This past week, yeah. And I was able to get it all down on paper. And so I started doing some sketches the other night of what I want the, like, basic bad guy troopers to look like.
Ooh.
And I wanted to share that drawing with you so that we could, like, look at it together.
Oh, let's do it. I want to see the bad guy troopers. And for those of you that are watching, we'll try and do some stuff to get it on the screen or share stuff in the description like we did last time.
Yeah, I'll try to. Should I drop it in the Dropbox or just in the chat here? What's easiest for you to be able to see it?
Put it in the Dropbox.
All right, here we go.
Relic bullets.
All right, it should be uploading. It's just a, like, sketchbook page.
Roger. Oh, okay, cool. Like a picture from the phone. What's it called?
Untitled artwork.
Ooh, it's untitled. Even though we know it's artwork.
I put it in a folder called Episode 1 so that we have our, like, reference stuff. Oh,
perfect.
I realize I should have told you that I did these drawings before we started recording, but I didn't really have a plan of what I was going to say.
Me neither. Isn't that crazy? Yeah. It's still not showing up, though. Oh, wait. It is syncing. So, but my PC is just being slow then. That's what's going down. Cool. I shall
return to that. But I think some of the fun stuff that I was doing with this game is, like, each playthrough, or each time you set up to play, you set up the scenario, so there will be variability between each setup and play, but you pretty much teleport in to into a world where this evil 10-headed sorcerer has set up shop, and then just start blasting with your commando. And then each enemy you destroy, you immediately gain an experience point and then spend it. So there's an upgrade tree where you choose how you're going to advance your character. And it makes it really fun where you're going through and, like, exploding guys, and you get immediate rewards for that through, like, character advancement that happens right away. And then also power-ups for items and equipment that you can get as you play. So there's a lot of, like, trying to race to power up your character for the boss fight.
Gotcha.
There's a bunch of cool mechanics that, as it developed sort of naturally from my imagination, I think I ran into some fun, easy to grasp.
What's your kind of, like, process when it comes to mechanics are clicking in your head?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're thinking about interactions via the table and mechanics and stuff like that. Yeah. Like, what do you do?
Well, I mean, a big part of it for me, I try to focus a bit on the, like, design intention, like the play experience that I want someone to have. So with this game, I really wanted to capture a button mashing arcade game. And then also the, like, fast paced weirdness of dual stick shooters. So that you know you're moving in one direction and you're shooting in another direction, And so you're always on the move and you're always shooting and you are trying to get like good positioning and avoid all the like enemy bullets that are flying across the battlefield. So like the enemy activation phase is called the bullet hell phase.
I love it.
And the character activation phase is the button mashing phase. Just, you know, make it really straightforward. Characters have tokens on them that they generate Twitch counters, and those are like sort of a reservoir of extra button mashing.
Is that based on the name? That sounds, it seems kind of like a reaction or push yourself mechanic.
Yeah, exactly. To mash the buttons even faster. And so as your character advances, you're able to unlock more of those tokens and then do more and more during your activation. So anyways, it's very, I'm stoked on it because it just all poured out of my head.
That's exciting, dude.
Pretty much just right now. And then, you know, for people that have been watching my Instagram for a while, they'll have seen that like dinosaur sculpt.
Yeah, the Triceratops looking dude with gun and club, right? Yeah. Is it a club?
Oh, pretty much. I think for the, when he becomes a Cretaceous commando, he's going to lose the club and the gun's going to be like five times as
way
big.
Way bigger.
Yeah, because the weapons are like one of the main things that your character upgrades. So they've got their own, you know, body upgrades, like they can recover health and run faster and twitch faster. But most of the upgrades just go into upgrading your weapon stats.
Have you ever heard of a game called Crackdown is what it's called. It's called Crackdown. No. It is sort of like it's this game in the style of a GTA open world game, but it was trying to do something original at the time. I can't remember the original release date. I want to say maybe like 2005 through 8 maybe would kind of be the original release window of Crackdown. Mm-hmm. But it was, you were playing like specialty engineered police. They're pretty much, it sounds like a horrible game now that I'm saying it out loud, but you are playing superhuman police essentially, and you're cracking down on crime, you know. Oh, but my. your police officer guy can jump 30 feet, he punch cars, lift cars, like all this crazy stuff, you know, like RoboCop, but kind of a superhuman angle. But the only reason I bring it up,
is that,
say that again?
Is it Terry Crews?
Terry Crews got involved in the later series. I don't think we talk about those because those ones were bad. But the only reason I bring it up is because the thing you're talking about, guns and upgrades, and I'm thinking about these guns being big, is that in Crackdown, one of the things that was cool was the police vehicle, the transport vehicle. And it was, for whatever reason, it was like an all-terrain everything vehicle. But it wasn't as if, like, Batman's got his, like, Batwing, and then he's got the Bat submarine, and he's got the Bat car and the Bat skateboard. This is all in one. Like, you get in, and you choose a mode, and the car could be in, like, sports car mode. But you press a button, and it transforms into, like, muscle car mode. But the animation and the style is kind of like Transformers, where new things are growing from it, and it's like somehow getting bigger. Things are, and I was just thinking about the guns doing that, where in the middle of the fight, a new barrel, like you know, some new attachment, flips on the side.
I kind of think I'm not gonna do this, but one of my original like brainstorming ideas was to make it so that the miniature had like a kung fu grip, and you just like actually as the weapon
you slot upgrade, in different like, weapons
with a bigger and bigger gun.
Oh my gosh, that
be a bit dumb, but also like really cool.
From a manufacturing standpoint, it would be super interesting.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go like design for 3D print this game so that like I can release commandos, new commandos or
yeah, you know, and you know, Peach is always clamoring.
New bosses, and it would just be a matter of a download with the down, you know, with the 3D printable figure, and then also a little, you know, new stage or new types of upgrades, weapon upgrades or whatever. So, but it'd be fun, like, because then you could make it so that the hands have like a hole, and then the, you know, in the middle of the grip, and then you can just have all of the weapons have like the same
size. This little peg style, like on some old school G.I. Joe stuff.
Wow. Yeah, exactly.
I like that a lot. You know.
Well, we'll see. I'll mess with some manufacturing or like some design stuff.
That's just, you know, that's an exciting idea. And, you know, we've always talked about the challenge. One of the things that's probably been kind of the conversation that we have a lot more than a lot of things is this whole, okay, how do we approach 3D printing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, with what specifically, like what you're doing, what you manufacture, what you're trying to sell, the game you're trying to put forth, and like the experience you're trying to, I guess for lack of a better term, like cater to.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's a ton people ask about like trying to get Relic Blade figures as 3D printable figures, and it's tough because, you know, my whole livelihood is Relic Blade, not just each figure that I sell, but also like theoretically the IP in the future.
Yeah,
and that sounds a little bit like, what's the word? Like prideful to try and imagine that it'd be worth something. But I mean, I've been making it for a long time, you know, and if someday they wanted to make a Relic Blade cartoon,
yeah,
you know, I deserve to
benefit. I completely agree. And, you know, I think I get what you're saying when you say, you know, like prideful or what.
Yeah.
But I think the reality is, you know, going back to a sort of another music analogy, which I guess you guys are going to hear a lot. But one of the things that I encounter a lot is people thinking and thank goodness they do so. But a lot of people will say things to me like, how haven't you blown up yet? Or why isn't your music as popular as X or Y? You know, and it really, there's this sort of real tangible thing of, if more people had access to this, how popular would it be? You know, like, and that's kind of what it makes me think about when I think about music and stuff, and all those comments that I've received over the years and support. It makes me think, oh, so really kind of what the difference right now is exposure. It's not a comment on quality. Like, you know, like even if this song doesn't perform as good as this song comparatively to my own stuff, you know, all of this, it's you can't really take it in any sort of meaningful assessment of like actual like data or anything, because it's not really measurable in that way. And if the right people heard it, or I guess to just go into a hypothetical like scientific experiment direction with it, if I was able to play my song, one of the latest song that I made on you know, Patreon or whatever, to 100,000 people, you know, just like press button, 100,000 people right now hear the song, you know, like that would have massive like implications, where that's kind of it. That's kind of the only thing that really separates a great deal of artists from I guess what we could call is like massive success, you know, like this sort of this, I love this thing so much that everybody should be into this. Why isn't everybody into this kind of thing? And, you know, with Relic Blade, I've always thought if there was a game like XCOM, like if you just take XCOM or XCOM 2, the sort of Final Fantasy Tactics game, you know, we have art assets that look just like the Relic Blade stuff. We have the main mechanics from the game, you know, plus other, you know, different quality of life improvements, but pretty much make a tactical game, battle game, and it's in the Relic Blade IP, that game would hit. That game would hit, you know. I think that people would absolutely love that game, playing the Relic Blade mechanics, getting into the Relic Blade world, and then, I guess, in the same vein as many people have gotten into, like, 40K and Warhammer, myself included, through games like Dawn of War.
I think you get into Warhammer through video games?
I got into Warhammer through video games. Not exposure, but that's what brought me over the other side. Is because I knew about them, but it wasn't until I played Dawn of War and like heard the universe, saw it, kind of got my teeth around it and understood what was going on. Then I was like, yo, these Space Marines is kind of cool. Really, it was the Dawn of War intro. Like, I know my true Dawn of War heads.
The video with the Dreadnought shooting guys.
Yes. And then the dude dying on, like, that intro, I was like, what's going on in this IP over here? You know,
that video, I feel like the guys that made that, like, have played Warhammer. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt.
Compared to other Warhammer video stuff I've seen, that like really captured stuff.
Yes, it captured the game because it wasn't focused on, like, whereas a modern take is very, for lack of a better term, very MCU-y, where they're focused on, again, the IP, they're focused on their characters, they're focused on the stories, and it kind of has a little bit of a G.I. Joe kind of feel where your good guy, your named characters can't die. You know, they're there to do stuff and they're there for plot to happen. And then you just have like tons of goons. Whereas back in the day, sure, there was named characters and stuff, but the feel of the game felt a lot more centric around your faceless soldier, a lot more emphasized on the theme and feeling of the universe, as opposed to being like, isn't Robo Gulliman like super sweet? Check how big he is. You know, you're like, oh man, that guy's big. He got a fire sword. That's like, crazy. He got to be the coolest guy.
All right. So we went aside, but the reason then I don't release Relic Blade figures for 3D printing is because it's really hard to control or manage an IP, and it would devalue its resale value.
Mm-hmm. If good on you for bringing us back to that, because I was gone. Your boy was in a different region. So yeah, you were mentioning that it's just difficult to keep a handle on it when the 3D prints, you know, because there's a couple of things to it the way that I see it is not only, and I guess what makes it difficult is that people are not even considering this side, so to speak, but it just kind of becomes about commodity. Again, we'll make another music analogy. When Napster, you know, torrenting and file sharing sites became prevalent, that was a big thing for the music industry to try to adapt to, because like when people can, you know, just download your entire library of music without ever interacting with you or touching any of your merchandise or any of your products, like that seems a little, that's kind of not what you want, but it's almost, in a sense, it reminds me of a similar situation where the industry's shifted now for music, where it's like, download music? What are you talking? Yeah, buy a record. Like, what are you talking about? Like, I just go on Spotify. You know, it's all already there. It's shifted from it being, I want to download this for free, to I don't even want to download this, but I would love access, you know, for free. To this thing where, I mean, that's obviously not this case for STLs because you got to download them, but But when people can download so many.
I think there's, because I think 3D printing is going to be a hobby of its own for a long time. And I would like to have Relic Blade stuff available as 3D printable stuff. But I think it'd need to be a version that is designed to be 3D
printed. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If I had a faction set or certain characters that are designed for people to be able to access that way, it would be really cool. Because then, yeah, you can get the digital guy, the digital questing knight printed, and it'll be a really cool sculpt. But it's different than the, like, than original. The other thing is, it makes it so that international people can buy and download and print Relic Blade, but then people who don't have 3D printers would still be able to get it. And so, anyways, I'm on the verge of unfolding that plan of making it accessible through 3D printing without undermining myself. And so with a game like Cretaceous Commandos, I want to be making a game that is designed intentionally as a game with 3D printable product that I'm producing. Mm-hmm. I think that it's something I want to explore, and I think Cretaceous Commandos could be a good place for it. And then also then I can exploit some weird stuff, like we were talking about alternate guns, right?
Yeah,
stuff
yeah.
that would be too complicated or silly to produce traditionally, but could be done through 3D printing more accessibly, like swappable weapons or limited edition or rather special edition skins for characters.
Interesting to think about skins for, yeah, yeah. Because, yeah. I mean, it's been happening. I think Kingdom Death is probably the one that comes to mind when I think about character skins. You have so many alternates of kind of like these existing models.
I was hanging out with my friend Lucas, and he was telling, because he played or does play and collect a ton of, what's the weird miniature game?
Malifaux.
And Malifaux has like alternate skin warbands that are like full on cyberpunk.
Oh, really? Like
different? Yeah, like themes. Totally different genre reskins. Oh,
that's interesting.
And so I don't know. I think with 3D printing, it'd be fun to be able to drop in a commando or whatever.
The boy is here now.
He came right in and now he's breathing heavy.
Oh, it's Grove Dino.
Hey, hello, Grover.
Relic Blade's best employee of the month. Yeah, employee of every month, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Hi, Grover. The Grove Dino is a dog-type Pokemon.
Yeah, despite interruptions, what I had wanted to say was, yes, Cretaceous Commandos is like spinning around in my imagination machine.
Mm-hmm.
I pumped out a bunch of the rules and play tested and worked through stuff. And then I started doing some drawings. I've got that sculpt that I'm going to just like reframe in the like Cretaceous Commandos universe. And then also I have these like dreams about making it like an easy to access 3D printable game, but also, you know, heck, I could do 2D standees, I could do whatever, because the idea is that it's going to be a very fun, cooperative, like, button mashing experience that you'll be able to, like, set up and play. And so I'm trying to work on accessibility also,
if that makes sense. Yeah, yeah, and I mean, that was something that I think, like, if I'm going to talk about the work that we've done on Relic Blade, and I think about, like, stuff that I'm super proud of, is, like, that kind of stuff that we've really focused on in the past is, like, accessibility. You know, like, Storms of Coral is the perfect example where I feel like the way that set works is just really exciting. crack it open, choose a side, get some characters, and then commence to battling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I really like how the campaign mechanics are card driven rather than like on a campaign sheet.
Yeah.
Because that makes it so there's just like way less bookkeeping. You don't have to like write down anything.
Yeah, you just... for sure. And as a game with, we'll say 300 plus card illustrations, like from the design perspective, you know, using those similar things, like there's just a lot of interesting things that are going on with the Relic Blade card design space that I think make accessibility super cool.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. Yeah, so I had a pretty fun... It was productive. It was a very productive week without being productive in the ways I intended.
Yeah, but still, that's...
Like,
that's
I didn't achieve any of my goals, but... I did make
but I made some goals that you didn't know that you wanted to achieve, sort of.
Well, they're on my list of things I'm supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't the stuff I intended to do last week.
Yeah, for sure. But like I said, it's like a catch from the universe, you know?
Yeah.
It's all about, it ain't kind of, you know, we're just little windows here,
mm-hmm,
to let the stuff flow through. Even though sometimes we have an idea of what we want to see on the other side of that window, it's going to be like, yeah. No, how about spacefaring, transdimensional, battled dinosaurs, commandos. Yeah. Ain't nothing they can do, Cretaceous commandos. You know, yeah, we're going to have to come up with the theme song for that as well. But that, your topic on that, because there's so much to unpack there that I think is really amazing. This design space idea about making games that are designed for print is really cool, especially being familiar with your capabilities and the stuff that you do already, physically manufacturing stuff like that. Like come on, you know, like the table that we saw yesterday that was just like that gorgeous example of Relic Blade being played with the foam foundation with the 3D printable like ruins on the top there. Like,
yeah,
there's just, you know, this the ideas for what could happen with a 3D printed Relic Blade set, especially with the capability of printers today. And also just for spreading the game around the world, because what has happened over this past week that I think is super interesting, that's been having me think a lot about stuff, is that Gates of Antares is a game that I've talked to you about before, and I've told you in the past that I think Gates of Antares is like just this it's just this sleeper hit of a game, the way that the way that it's written from the lore perspective and the way that that stuff like goes into mechanical interaction and stuff. It's a real labor of love in an interesting way, and high science fiction writing that is that, you know, your brain can grab onto it. Whereas, you know, again, big fan of 40K, but the Grimdark, that's why I think there's so much mystery about what's Grimdark, because it's a little bit nebulous. It's a little bit interpretive. Whereas this game
really line up with, like, I don't know, I feel like I want to know how people live.
Exactly. That's or kind like of how does it work? How does it even work? Yeah. You know, how does the details click together? And that's something that Gates of Antares, there is some stuff that you got to be like, what exactly is going on? But once you get it, you're just like, that's extremely clever. Like, I love that. A simple example is that all of the advanced alien races, and we're using the term alien air quotes, are just human morphs. And it's just like, what happens to the human species when it spreads across the universe and is existing in different biomes and stuff? You get different, they look different. They're not the same, you know, they don't look exactly the same, but they're still technically humans. They're just sort of evolved differently, you know? And that kind of idea about the different races not shooting at each other just because they're different, and they're actually kind of like distant cousins and stuff. Like all these little interesting details about the way that the game work, I really enjoyed. But this maybe 2 weeks ago now, Warlord announced that they're no longer going to support Gates of Antares, and this was right on the cusp of the lead up to the supposed drop of the Gates of Antares 2 rules. And what has happened is Tim Bancroft and Rick Priestley, creator of Gates, I suspect he probably knew that they weren't going to be able to print the book some time ago, but, you know, kept it close to the chest. And now that the news is out, what they've done is super interesting, where essentially they say Gates 2 is out. It's for free. It's not a complete rehaul of the thing. It's more kind of like what we did with edition 2 of the Seeker's Handbook. Just smooth some corners, essentially, but the whole game is pretty much the same. You know, there is big revamps here and there, but as I was reading the intro, Tim Bancroft says, Gates 2 is a completely community-driven game. This game is not, this game is not commercially available. This is quite literally now a fan game. So download it, play it. Grab your friends, play the thing. And you know, it's like it's revitalized the Gates of Antares community, where giving this, and I mean, who knows how long it will last, because Gates has been around for a while and it's never caught on despite its amazing system. But just this idea of, we need to pivot, we're gonna give the game to you, you know, we're going to give all the resources for the game to you. All the models are still exist and they're still being manufactured and stuff, just not by Warlord in the future. But if you're listening to this, you should be able to get quite literally every Gates army for a reasonable price. But that permission, that just like baton handover, you know, where it's like, here's the game we made. We can't labor to make it, you know, to support it in the traditional sense. But that being said, you know, the Gates community is super strong, so we're going to do what we can when we can, but otherwise it's yours. It's in your hands now, you know? Mm-hmm. And
does that mean that, like, because we were talking about 3D printing and stuff, does that mean that they expect their world and character designs to be sculpted and printed by
you game got
Patreons
it.
And stuff?
So no, I don't think. I think I'm sure that there is, because Warlord still
open to it. Because like,
yeah, Patreon, no, they definitely are. Rick and Tim themselves said, you know, in another podcast interview, shout out to Tabletop Warlords, that the idea is, yeah, maybe in the future we will find a sculptor. You know, they'll hire a sculptor to exercise their ideas about, you know, bringing to life things that they've been trying to bring to life for Gates 1, but they just like couldn't manufacture them.
Right,
So that is absolutely, I think the term for physical expansions, physical is a weird word to use, but for like game expansions and for models, new units, new campaigns. Yep. All of that is being completely put on the players to create, and is being, the permission is being given with certain limitations. Like I know Warlord still owns the term Gates of Antares, so there's some stuff, but otherwise, even in the rule book of Gates 2, I found it super interesting that Tim, and you know, this must have been a sort of maybe not last minute, but something that they considered as they knew that they couldn't, that it wasn't going to be like sellable by Warlord, where they said Gates 2 is high sci-fi, uses these mechanics, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's designed for the Gates of Antares universe, which you can read about here and there, yada, yada. But it's suitable for any game. So, I mean, if you want to play a game with these rules, go for it, you know? So it's, and they can say that now because it's not, and so it's just interesting because it just opens up these ideas. So like those little tribal guys that we were talking about earlier, you know, yeah. Now it's very easy and accessible for this idea of thinking about like feral aliens that you might encounter in a scenario. And you're like, oh, well, I want them to have these stats and these stats. And you can write all that up, upload it to the Gates of Antares Nexus, and have that file for like anybody to access so that they can use, you know, so it's becoming this community driven game where that kind of like that reach is being extended by the players. And it's just really interesting to see the reaction, and it's got me excited. You know, I'm excited kind of about it again, but I don't.
That's cool. Yeah, I think it's interesting that, because we're running into a lot of, there's a lot of stuff happening with production issues.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we're going to have to explore more options as it goes on, because yeah, Antares runs into a problem. Like I haven't played it, but I remember you talking about how they make reference to a lot of stuff that hasn't.
Yeah, they can't actually manufacture, namely the Vorl.
I mean, part of it is that they're making like big metal armies or making big, you know, plastic kits. And that stuff is like really expensive to make and getting more expensive. Like today I was shipping stuff around, you know, I spent my Monday morning shipping Relic Blade orders, and like I charge kind of a flat rate for shipping, where I just, if it's going to a certain area, then I'll like ask for a certain amount to help cover some of the cost. But a lot of the, like the shipping to the UK was all like $40 per package. Sure. And shipping to New Zealand was like all like $60 per package. Yeah, and see, like, you know, people place their orders and I do whatever I can. I kind of think of it as, since they're buying it direct from me, I think of it as a like wholesale discount by me covering most of the shipping cost. But I don't know, it's sort of hidden. I don't think people really realize that I'm dropping $70.
Oh, I doubt they do. I doubt they do.
Yeah, like, and then of course any of shipping materials, of course, comes out of that.
And you reminded
me. No one wants to pay a lot for shipping, but I can't be like, all right, guys.
It's a very normal thing, you know. You see, you pay $15 for something, and that shipping comes up, and it's $13. You're like, why? You know, even if you understand, your brain is still gonna, how come? You know,
what's up with that? You know?
Yeah, and, for sure.
You know, I've got friends who are producing plastic kits overseas, and it's taking years for it to come to fruition. Or, you know, board games that should have been simple, like card games, taking years to come out.
And you reminded me of like
trying to get a faster, loose print and play, like community driven thing is appealing. Yeah. But I mean, I love buying a model kit and having it come in a box, you know? So I'm always driving, I'm pulled between those things with Metal King Studio, trying to make sure it looks like a model kit when you get it, instead of a garage kit, even though it's shipping from a garage. So
part of the hobby
for me is that like something shiny and new and kind of a curated content.
Absolutely. So, like we watched that happen today on stream, you know, like that's not that experience. That's not going to happen with a digital product.
We better say what that was. We can't just make references to things we did earlier without saying. We went, it was Whittle Goblin on Twitch.
Witty.
Right?
Yeah.
Witty. And she was, Malev told me that she might like Relic Blade stuff, and I sent some Relic Blade stuff out to her, and she did like a live unboxing. And it was really cool to see, because she was like, you know, opening card packs and looking at cards and reacting to it in real time. And you know, I was shipping orders in my garage and had it on in the background, but it's still really cool because there were a bunch of things that I kind of thought were like Easter eggs, maybe someone will notice, that she was picking up on like right away and like getting a sense for the game with goofy stuff like the botanist swinging around that beat. Or, you know, the Not For Babies icon on the back of the box.
That's my favorite, the classic.
Like she noticed, like, is it recommended for ages 12 and up, and the little boy's wearing a t-shirt that has the number 12 on it. And it's like, there's so many stupid little details that and like, I giggle and then I forget about it because I just am making, you know, my art, and I send it out and I forget that people are looking
at look at, get that stuff. And you see, like, that's that when we were talking, what we opened up last time is we were talking about like this idea of feeling connected, wanting to have your, you just kind of, as an artist, when you create something, I feel like at its simplest, what you want is that end result connection, you know? And so you can't always get it, or sometimes you just literally never can, you know?
But I never really saw someone
exactly right, and that's just like,
what's reacting in real time with that level of enthusiasm, because I've seen unboxings that are like kind of clinical, like what's in the box,
curated stuff or edited video perhaps,
but it was fun to like kind of get her impressions as she went through the relic plate stuff, and it was really exciting for me because it made me feel like all this goofy stuff I've been making goes out to people who are also goofy and like that stuff.
Yeah.
You know? And so I don't know. It was really,
when I watch people interact with your stuff, and because it's pretty much, it's a simple thing. I'm like looking for them to have a similar experience that I had when I first interacted with Relic Blade stuff. Cause it's like coming from the Games Workshop's realm of things in the early stages of the hobby, you get used to seeing these artistic depictions of things, and that's cool. You start to build this idea about imagery and what sort of stuff is, you know, kind of gives you the feel and the vibe of the game that you're playing. And in 40K, there was always particular artists that I gravitated to over others. David Gallagher, shout out.
You'd like pick and choose.
Yeah, you pick and choose which artist that you kind of really jived with, and you'd be like, "This is the guy who's selling me the thing," you know. And that was fine, and you'd really see the figures and stuff, and you knew it was all connected. You knew when you saw a piece of art that, oh, this was this guy or whatever. But nowadays, it's reverse to where, as, or I can't state that it's reverse, but it feels reverse to where they do miniature design first and then they tell an artist to draw it as opposed to concepting
will you draw a picture of this miniature
of this guy. Yeah, and so you have these like one-to-one things, and that makes sense because that's what happens in Relic Blade too, but the difference is when you're interacting with Relic Blade, there's a crazy consistency that if you've interacted with tons of wargame rule books throughout your life, when you flip through the Relic Blade rulebook and you look at the cards and you look at the miniatures, there's this insane consistency that just like it speaks to you that in an experience level, because like, again, flipping through all the older different books of the yesteryear and stuff, you gravitate to an artist's style, and you may like this one painted miniature, but there isn't a cohesive relationship between all of those things, because it's like a more traditional art department or something. But when it all comes from you, there is like there's this innate intelligence inside that maybe people won't be able to put to words, you know, but you just recognize it. You're like, this is cool, man. You know, when you let it in and you look and you think, it starts to sit in your mind. And I remember that was the first thing that like really inspired me back like in 2015, before we even met, when I backed the Relic Blade 2 player, the first Kickstarter, because that was the first thing I ever backed on Kickstarter. And just like seeing it, it was like you were doing all of these things that like 14-year-old me would just be like hyped about, be like, what, you know? So I was like, whoa, I need to get on. This is so cool. This guy did, he'd be drawing everything. It's a miniatures games. He's all of this, it's got stuff. And then I remember getting it finally, like months later, maybe like 5 months later or something like that. It took me an actual year from like delivery to painting them, And then I started playing the game by myself, just like rolling dice and stuff. And then I was just like, oh my gosh, this game is fun. What the heck? You know? And then I was like, yo, there's something up with this. There's something going on with this Sean Sutter guy.
Yeah, and it's funny because those steps that you're talking about are essentially what I go through when I'm making it, you know? Like, oh, this drawing is cool. Oh, this is fun. Oh, knight, yes. Like, oh, he should hit a guy. I don't know. And so seeing Witty today kind of go through the stages of being introduced to the Relic Blade world was really fun and a nice reminder that, like, people do see what I'm making. Yeah. I don't know. It sounds so stupid or so obvious, but
doesn't to me. I'll tell you that.
Most people see things and think thoughts, but because she was unboxing it for an audience, she was saying her thoughts out loud.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think that's where I finally was able to make the connection and be like, oh, good. So what I was thinking when I made it is being the thing that she's thinking and when she sees it. Like, I feel it's communicating. It's working.
Yeah, so, yeah.
That was a fun moment from today.
That was hype. So, Sean, other than Cretaceous Commandos, have you been playing anything this past week?
Dude, I played nothing else.
Playtesting, man.
Yeah, that was all I did for work, and I didn't really have any free time to do anything else.
I did see you went on hikes, I think. I'm pretty sure
I went on multiple hikes.
Ooh, that was multiple really nice. Hikes.
And that's while cool. I was enjoying nature, I imagined Cretaceous Commandos and Relic Blade guys.
I love that. Every time that we're hanging out and we go on a hike out there in the California hills, it really gets my imagination going. I start looking at nature in a different way, you know.
Yeah.
And start looking at just the shapes in the hills, you know, like, ooh, that'd be a crazy spot for, you know, if an ambush happened here, like, I'd have to duck behind this, gotta dive behind this tree right here. You know, it just, these little interactions that are cinematic and imaginative just begin to, like, kind of form in my head.
Yeah, probably because when you come out and visit, we spend the whole time in worlds of imagination.
Yep, and just trying to... Another
fun thing that happened this week is I found a new pet spider.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, if this is being recorded, video recording, probably people would have noticed that I keep looking up.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, spider. Over there, you're watching him?
Yeah. Anyways, I got a new jumping spider. I was watering my persimmon tree.
And you're just like, oh, what up, little dude?
Yep. I immediately named it Ajax. But I'm not sure if it's male or female. Do males or females have the fluffier mandibles? I don't
know. Yeah, I can't remember. If memory served me, because... I overheard a conversation. I was thinking that. But yeah, I'd have to ask.
Yeah, well, either way, Ajax has a big mustache, so.
That's crazy.
I jumped too soon before it could upload earlier, but pull up the sketches I did of.
Oh yeah, no, we could do that. I'll do that in the post, and we can. So I'll bring.
Want you to look at them though.
I got them up. I think they look really cool. I like the cyclop styled nature to like their outfit. It kind of gives me like this interesting vibe. Are like, are they human? Are they robots?
Yeah, I should have numbered them. But I think, all right, if there's the guy that looks like he's kind of a new Star Wars guy, kind of Boba Fett-y. I'm not crazy about that. But the guy over that has the like round helmet with the single eye, I think I'm leaning towards that. And then also all the way over to the top right, the like... And the other, like, Cyclops guy with the pointier helmet.
Yeah, yeah.
Either the round helmet or the pointy helmet, or maybe both. But I think that's where I'm going with them, the little, like, void troopers. I want them to be... I think I'll probably make the game mostly cartoony. At first, I was thinking the bad guys would be more serious, and then the good guys would be these like goofy rainbow dinosaurs. But I think it's all going to be more comic book style.
Yeah, that's exciting. I'm really digging the way that they're looking, and the gestural style of the sketches is always cool, just kind of conveying emotion and sort of feel these shapes and stuff. The way you do,
yeah,
just got his open blast position. Ga, 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 ga.
I was trying to figure out with the helmets, trying to figure out how to use the shapes to express something about who or what they are. And they're supposed to be, they're like, the Void Troopers are manifestations or like evil ideas that have been given form as little soldiers. And so I think that the one eye helps make it them look less like they're humans, but they have the like humanoid body of like two arms, two legs. Because I want to make it clear that the bad guys can look like humans, but the thing that's really makes them a bad guy is that they are these like fascist bad ideas. Like trying to push and pull between like it's not the troop, it's not a person that's the bad guy, it's a evil idea, and people can be corrupted by evil ideas, but it's that doesn't change the fact that the evil idea was the problem in the beginning. So I think that's part of it, is that I want these like really fun cartoony action hero dinosaur commandos to be going and blowing up these, you know, space fascists, troopers.
I like, but also
make sure the troopers aren't people. So anyways, I think I'm going for that, like either pointy helmet or round helmet, cyclops helmet, troopers with blasters. They'll be pretty simple, but I think they'll be a lot of fun. I'm hoping to make them fun and easy to paint.
I think they're going to look, yeah. I mean, it's looking really sweet. I'm digging the design. And I don't know what your colors would be, but I'm seeing them like in this all black with like slight little hints of red, or they have red glowing eyes or something like
that. Yeah, I was thinking about that, like trying to make sure I don't want them necessarily to be overly Nazis. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But at the same time, that is part of the like Metal Slug aesthetic, to have the bad guys be like fake Nazis. You know what I mean? And I think that could happen with these guys, to make them, to like use that shorthand.
Yeah, but for sure.
But also, I mean, we can paint them all kinds of ways. It's a Void Sorcerer, a 10-headed sorcerer named Voidra. Or Voidra? Voidra? Anyways, like King, you know, a little bit like a Mum-Ra or a Cobra Commander sort of bad guy, but a sorcerer. And 10-headed demon, and then his Void Troopers. So there's like a level of,
yeah, if we keep going in that direction, I think the
Cobra, and we'll see.
I like that kind of vibe, and I think I definitely won't really still communicate without crossing lines.
I mean, anyone could paint them, but like you could paint them dark blue with red, and then that would give it like a Cobra.
Mm-hmm.
Like shiny chrome helmets.
Yeah,
that'd be a funny way to do it.
And I think I don't know if the setting has. I mean, you're making a small game, so I'm just thinking out loud here. But if the setting has specific planets, you know, coming up with the regiment of that planet that you got to just go and blast up, could be some fun too.
Yeah,
lots of opportunities.
Yeah, it takes place across infinite dimensions. So I think there's room for making all kinds of wacky sci-fi troop sets, or someone could just, you know, pick up a Stargrave Trooper box and fill out their roster. But
that'd be
or
cool.
Heck, someone could play with, you know, their Space Orcs or their Necrons as the bad guys, or even with Space Marines as the bad guys. It does.
Hey, you know. now we're communicating.
Mm-hmm. But anyways, it was a lot of fun to like run through that game design, writing rules and exploring like the way
the
game mechanics, like are a fun puzzle that I'm making and I get to unlock and build. And then as you or as other people are playing it, they'll get to start wrapping their mind around like, oh, when I upgrade my gun this way, it makes it, you know, these benefits happen. It'll be easier to hit, but that also means this, and that also, you know.
So you said that, and I was immediately thinking, I don't know how your shooting mechanics work, but if there's like a mechanic that's kind of like in your side-scrolling shooters where you like grab the little power-up and suddenly your turret now shoots a ball that splits into two balls that goes into a particular, you know, cone or something. It'd be interesting if you had gun effects like that.
There's a grenade launcher upgrade, so that among the bullets that you're shooting are also explosive grenades.
Oh, okay.
There's a mega laser, of course.
Mega laser
makes it so that, because movement and facing are really important in this like dual stick shooter, like where you're running around the board all the time.
Yeah, looking about.
If if guys are along that line of fire, then you can hit more guys by lining up your laser. There's a missile, there are bombs, there are sandwiches.
Oh man, you gotta have one-ups.
All kinds of different upgrades and weapons. Very arcade bullet hell shooter style.
I think that's gonna be pretty hype, yeah. And we'll be surely talking about more Cretaceous Commandos as it kind of develops further in the Sean mind.
Yeah, I think what I need to do is just like get it all sorted quickly while I'm overwhelmed with inspiration. Mm-hmm. so that it'll all be set up for when Blaster 5 drops, which who knows when that'll be exactly, because Blaster 4 was so much went into it, and then there were so many delays because of DriveThruRPG or because of different errors, and like it dragged on. And so I think everyone needs a little bit of a rest. But apparently, even when I'm resting, I still suddenly
just want to create.
Yeah.
Yep. And there's lots to create, lots to manifest from the Sean Sutter mind. And today on this episode of Relic Buds, we have been super blabbing of just about, I think it's a great example of what will hopefully be a pretty standard episode of Relic Buds, you know, just musing, hanging, long chatting. I think we should wrap it up for this episode. And I've got some things that I want to talk about next time. A lot.
Did you take notes?
I did. I took some
notes. Yeah, I kind of dove in. I was too excited about what I've been crafting.
I know. It's so crazy.
I mean, that's part of the fun is like normally I would just keep this all secret.
Yeah, yeah,
and
exactly.
Like, and I would maybe, like, I sent you a picture, a sketch of the like prototype character card character for Cretaceous Commando, or like I'd type into the Blaster chat on Skype and be like, I made progress this week, and they'd be like, good work. But if you're excited enough to log into Relic Buds, then that makes you a Relic Bud by default.
For sure.
And that means that you're pretty much just hanging out with me in my studio. So I have no secrets.
Yep. And then I think it's worth mentioning a little caveat too that also gives strength to this format is like, if that's the type of stuff that you normally keep secret for whatever reason, one of the things that's worth mentioning is that the stuff that we talk about here is not necessarily going to be what happens, you know?
Things could change, yeah, of course.
It's just kind of the core idea, the skeletons, you know, we're just going, trying to catch those passes from the universe and follow the inspiration and see what kind of things come out on the other end.
Yeah, it's true. That's another thing that like makes it hard is if you announce something, then there's some kind of like promise or expectation. So even though Cretaceous Commandos isn't announced, strictly speaking, you guys know that it's going to be something and that I've been excited about it. And I'll be happy to talk more about it as we get closer. But
yeah.
This week, I mean, next week, I should probably work on Relic Blade solo.
Yeah. We could talk about maybe next week we could maybe make that the something, because there's been some feedback from playtesting. We've talked about a couple of new ideas, and I'm actually kind of really excited about attempting to implement some of these things. And they feel to me, as the person who kind of put together that main engine, that this is kind of stuff that I feel like has been missing from this. So I'm excited about it. But
yeah, me too.
We're gonna sign off. I've been your boy Maleb the Shinobi. Here is Sean Sutter.
Sean Sutter, the Metal King of Metal King Studio. Mm-hmm.
You can see it. It's right there. And we over here are the Relic Buds. Bam, bam. And we thank y'all for catching episode 1. We'll be back soon with episode 2. Much love and peace, y'all.